A hush fell over the crowd. Except right here, they don't care. Hey, let's go ahead and get started. For those of you who I haven't met or don't know, my name is Andrew Jones, and I am a pastor at Christ Community. I started in a new role in January. That's called Pastor of Spiritual Formation. And so part of that role is kind of administrating Raisers here at Leawood and also being a primary teacher for Raisers too. So you should all feel very blessed that I'm here. I seated Ben here. He's just supposed to make me look good the whole time. Let's open in a word of prayer and then we'll dive in, okay? Father, thank you for this wonderful group of people and for the opportunity to learn more about who you are and the life you've designed for us to live. I pray you open our hearts, give us energy to listen, and give us openness to what you would speak to us tonight. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen. Well, you guys made it here. Good job. I was worried if you'd all make it to your classrooms or not. I came down about 10, 15 minutes ago, I made sure no one was wandering around in there like, where's my group? But I think you all made it. A few housekeeping items before we get started. The first is we will be posting podcasts of lectures. So if you miss a lecture or if you want to listen to something because you thought it was just that good, and listen to it again, those will be posted on our website on the Raisers page. I don't think that link is up right now, but it will be soon. So just be on the lookout for that. And then second housekeeping item, this is just a few format changes. So you've already experienced one of those if you took Raisers 1 last year, which is you'll start in your small groups and you'll end in lecture in Raisers 2. But I think you already figured that out, so you're good to go. That can make the homework just a little tricky. So just so you know, for example, your homework this week, this coming week, is going to be to read an article about worldview that we're going to talk about tonight. Talk about worldview tonight. You'll read an article about it during the week. You'll talk about it in your groups on Wednesday night, next Wednesday. Then you'll come to lecture for a new topic for the following week. Does that make sense? So it can get a little confusing because it's flipped from Raisers 1. Just wanted to make sure we're on the same page. Okay, so housekeeping out of the way, let me be the first to congratulate you on making it through Raisers 1 last year and deciding you hadn't had enough punishment. You were coming back for Raisers 2. No, in all seriousness, this is a really transformative curriculum. For me personally, I actually just finished the content last year, and it's really eye-opening to see the world through this Christian lens, this tome lens. We're going to talk more about that as we go. I just wanted to point out this content isn't just transformative for people, but Raisers 2 has made a huge imprint on Christ Community and the way we understand our mission in the world. So if you've been here on a Sunday morning, which probably most of you have, if you've ever looked above the worship team in our worship center, there are four panels or four pictures around the cross in the middle. Has anyone ever seen that before, those four pictures? Maybe what you didn't know is those four pictures actually stand for the four-chapter story of the Bible. So creation, fall, redemption, new creation. And we're going to talk more about those later. But those are straight out of Raisers 2. And we've highlighted those in our worship center because that's really the lens through which Christ Community sees so much of who we are and what we're supposed to be doing in the world. So what you're going through right now, what you're committing to right now, is something really important, something we believe in very much here at Christ Community. So I hope you're excited. As we get started, I want to start, I was talking to Mary as I came in, and she said, I hope you're going to do some review because I haven't taken Raisers 1 in 7 years. So we're going to start with just a little bit of review of Raisers 1, so to remind us all where we've been. And if you remember, way back when you took Raisers 1, Raisers as a whole really focuses on kind of three big ideas. There's a new way of being, a new way of seeing, and a new way of living. And Razors 1, if you remember, really focused in on this new way of being. Answering questions like, what does it mean to be a person of integrity? How do we begin to knit together our beliefs and our behaviors? So that was kind of the big question in Razors 1. And if you remember, we had kind of a diagram in your notebooks of Razors 1. And over here we had beliefs. And over here we had behaviors. And then we drew this bridge across the two. So it was about, so Razors was about linking our beliefs and our behaviors. Does anybody remember what this bridge was? Disciplines, yeah. The disciplines. So really what we focused on in Razors 1, see if I can spell discipline, there we go. What we focused on was this idea that as Christians we believe things that need to express themselves in certain behaviors, certain ways of living, right? A new way of being, new way of doing, of living, I should say. And that to bind those things together, to make sure our behaviors are communicating our beliefs, the disciplines help us to link those things together. Talked a lot about that in Razors 1. So the disciplines make this bridge. We're going to do a little bit more review. But that's kind of the big idea of Razors 1, if you remember. Now, let's talk a little bit more about Razors 2. Razors 2 is really more about about a new way of seeing and a new way of living. And so you guys signed up, so clearly somebody convinced you to be here. And they probably told you something a little bit about Razors 2. What do you guys know about Razors 2 maybe that's different from Razors 1? Anything? Something new about Razors 2? Harder? Is it harder? It depends on how you define harder, which is, right, a total cop-out. There is less homework, generally, in Razors 2 than Razors 1. Yeah, that's worth a hand, I think. Yes. Yes, absolutely. Razors 1 is a little bit more individual focused. Razors 2 is a lot more public or communal focused. They have both have elements of both, but you're right, overall. Anything else? Well, I thought of just a few I wanted to put on your radar as we get started. The first kind of big difference is Razors 2 is more personal. And what I mean by that is that Razors 2 is really designed to challenge what we believe as Christians. Not just for the sake of challenging, but it's meant to challenge us in how we see our Christian faith. And if you remember in Razors 1, we talked a lot about the disciplines of learning, unlearning, and relearning. So the Christian faith sometimes involves learning something new. Sometimes it involves unlearning something that's wrong. And sometimes it involves relearning something that you've forgotten. And Razors 2 involves a lot of unlearning. It involves a lot of challenging categories that we've assumed as Christians, many of us, and bringing us, hopefully, into a more biblical view of the world. So it's more personal in that it challenges inadequacies in the way that we live. And it really does. And our hope is that it does that. Another difference, and I mentioned it before from Mary's comment, but it's more public. It's more public. It deals with our public lives. Razors 2 deals a lot with our public lives. And by that, I mean we're going to be talking about sexuality. We're going to be talking about church. We're going to be talking about government. We're going to be talking about work, talking about rest. And a lot of these are wrapped up in our public identities, right? Our the things other people can see in other institutions in our lives that we interact with, like our work, like our marriages. So it's more a public conversation. It's also more conversational than Razors 1. At least that's our hope. Our hope is that this is more conversational. You are now master's level Razors graduates. So last year you were in undergrad, this year you're in grad school. And so we want to hear from you. I know, don't be intimidated by that because you're ready for it. We want to hear from you. Your groups want to hear from you. We want you guys engaging. You'll notice throughout this semester, I'm going to create intentional space for us to interact. And I want you to do that. Like I said, you're at a master's level, and you're ready to engage and question things. And do that in your groups, too. And then finally, and this is why I said it depends on what you mean by hard. It's more critical thinking. It's more critical thinking. So the discussion you guys are going to have and the value that you're going to get out of Raisers 2 is directly linked to how you engage with the reading, how you engage with the material. So we're hoping that you're going to be doing less homework, but we want you engaging mentally with the homework in a deeper way, in a more critical way, asking questions and saying, well, I don't know if I agree with that. I want to talk more in my group about this. So our hope is, again, because you've gone through Raisers 1, that you're in a position to do a little bit more of that. And we say this every year, and we mean it. In Raisers 2, we hope that you disagree with something that is said during Raisers 2. Because that's the only way we know you're actually being challenged by something. So we hope that you disagree with something. Now, we're not imagining that anyone's going to leave the church over issues we're talking about. Especially this group, because I know you guys are committed to being here. But again, we're hoping for some lively conversation. We're hoping for some dialogue. We're hoping that this challenges assumptions you've had about Christianity and about the world. So again, I hope you disagree. Does anyone disagree with that statement right now? Is anybody ready? I thought, what if someone says, I disagree with that? How do I respond to that? I'd be in trouble. All right, so that's a little bit of what's different about Raisers 2, at least in my mind. Now, jumping back to Raisers 1, and we're gonna link this again to Raisers 2. As you think back to Raisers 1, what is the one big word, the one big idea we talked about in Raisers 1? Tome. Now, what does tome mean? By the way, technically, to translate it from the Hebrew, you would spell it like that, but we don't do that here, so. If you think hard enough about it, you'll realize why we do that. So from Raisers 1, what do we mean by tome? Somebody? Integral life, yes. Integrity. Any other words? Whole. I don't know who said that, but yes, it's good. Wholeness. All of life is worship. All of life is worship. That's the big idea behind tome. And integrity and wholeness. It means that there's no part of your life, there's no part of you that God doesn't care about, that God isn't involved in, and that God isn't trying to teach you something, isn't trying to transform you and change you through. So that means your job is important to God, your family is important to God. The way you rest and spend your time is important to God. The way you use your resources, everything, seamless, tome, it's whole. All of life is worship. It's a tome way of being. Again, Raisers 1, it's a new way of being, a tome way of being. What else do you remember about Raisers 1? What do you after taking it last year or several years ago, what still stands out in your mind? Concepts or words? The yoke. Is that Katie Beth? It's Stephanie. Okay. Well, you're a cheater. Just kidding. Yes, the yoke. Yeah, this idea of Matthew 11, right? Come to me, you who are weary and heavy laden, I'll give you rest. Take my yoke upon you. It's really related to the word apprenticeship. I mean, the yoke is a symbol of our apprenticeship to Jesus. If you remember from Raisers 1, we talk about there's the great commandment, right? Love God, love your neighbor. Jesus says is the great commandment. Love God, love your neighbor. There's the great commission in Matthew 28, which is go to the world and make disciples. And then between those, we talk about something that a lot of people don't talk about, which is the great invitation. And that's the scripture I said earlier, Matthew 11, when Jesus invites people, come to me, you who are weary and heavy laden, I'll give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me. Jesus, we would not be able to live, to grow in our expression of the great commandment or the great commission if Jesus did not personally invite each one of us into an apprenticing relationship with him in the yoke. Right? We're not just, I mean, discipleship is a good word, but apprenticeship gets at the heart of this idea that Jesus is personally involved in making us more like him. Apprenticeship is a big concept there. Anything else in Raisers 1? Other words or concepts? John? Yes, so living the life you were designed to live. We talked a lot about the purpose or the importance of design, not only for life, well, for everything involved in our lives. We're going to talk more about that, too, in Raisers 2. Anything else? Well, a few more I thought of. One has already been mentioned, the disciplines. The disciplines. I mean, we talked a ton about the disciplines in Raisers 1. It's related to apprenticeship. And this idea was revolutionary for me in terms of how the disciplines were framed in Raisers 1. And it's training off the spot so that you're ready on the spot. Does anybody remember that? Training off the spot so that you're ready on the spot. Now, by that we mean there's an analogy you can use. So there's a football game going on right now, I think. All of those athletes are performing at their highest level, right, during this game. But how are they able to do that? They didn't just show up and start playing, right? They've been practicing. They've been drilling. They've been going over plays over and over and over again, off the spot, right? Practice, off the spot. So that on the spot, during the big game, their body reacts the way they've trained it to, instinctually, right? It's become a part of who they are. Through the discipline of practice. Through the discipline of practice. And that's hard, sometimes that's hard to hear, even for athletes. Most athletes don't love practice, but they love playing the game. The analogy can transfer to our Christian lives. Paul often will compare the Christian life to running a race, right? To training for a marathon. And the importance of that metaphor is the disciplines help us. They provide a framework for us to train off the spot so that when temptation comes, or when a big decision comes, right, we have trained ourselves to react in a biblical way. Does that make sense? This is what the disciplines help us to do, this idea of the disciplines. And then related to that, and you have to hear this too when you talk about the disciplines, is the idea of grace. Grace. Grace is unmerited gift of salvation that God gives. But it's important to remember. And this, if you can hang on to this, this is such an important quote. Grace is opposed to earning, but not effort. Grace is opposed to earning, but not effort. In other words, it's clear in the New Testament and our faith that you cannot earn salvation from God. It is only by the finished work of Jesus on the cross that any of us are acceptable to God. But from that moment on, we are called to partner with the Spirit in transforming us into Christ-likeness. God calls us to partner with him in that. It doesn't change our standing before God, but God didn't just save us to get us out of hell. He saved us to turn us into the people we were designed to be, which through the yoke, through apprenticeship, we partner with the Spirit in that. In Philippians, Paul says, work out your salvation, right? We work alongside the Spirit. We have a part to play in that. Grace is opposed to earning, but not effort. Really important concept. Are there questions about that? You see that same dynamic, especially of apprenticeship, in the Old Testament with Abraham. There was a scripture we memorized in Raisers 1. It was Genesis 17, 1 and 2. You should have a bullet in there. I think we have the slide with it here. Thanks, Scott. By the way, Scott is running our tech all year long. And we love him to death for it. Yeah, give him a hand. Otherwise, I would be running back and forth while this happened. Does anybody remember that? Does anybody still have that text memorized? Well, I guess I just put it up there. I do. So the important part here is God says, I am God Almighty. He's saying this to Abram. Walk before me and be blameless. And blameless is that word, tome. That I may make my covenant between me and you may multiply you greatly. And apprenticeship is right there. Before Jesus, the idea of apprenticeship, of God inviting people into relationship with him for transformation, it's right here. And you see it in this phrase, walk before me. walk before me. Now, when I first read that, it sounds kind of like God saying, Abraham, you better be blameless because I'm watching you, right? Walk before me. Kind of like how I watch my daughter walk around and I wait for her to go to the plug that she's not allowed to touch. So there's something like that kind of idea. When I first read that, I thought, okay, this it's almost a threat built into that. But as I studied that phrase more in the Hebrew, it's a phrase that communicates intimacy or friendship. It's another way of saying, I'm with you to be blameless. Walk before me. I am with you and be blameless. I'm going to help you in this journey to be tone. I'm partnering with you. You're my apprentice in this process. This is what God is saying to Abram. So it's right there in the Old Testament, this idea of apprenticeship and of intimacy with God and how he transforms us. Now, so that's kind of being, this is, again, this is the idea of being tome. We've been talking about Razors 1 a little bit. Razors 2 is about seeing tome. It's really about seeing tome. It's about interpreting the world around us in a tome way, an integral way, a biblical way. And we want a holistic tome worldview. It's kind of what we're getting at here in Razors 2. So jumping down to this next bullet, what do I mean by worldview? When I say tome worldview, what am I talking about? Worldview is a kind of a fancy word that just means the lens through which everything else is seen. The lens through which everything else is seen, even if you don't know it, even if you're not conscious of it, you have a worldview. You have a way of seeing the world. I see some glasses out there. We got some glasses wearers out there. Do we have anyone that wears contact lenses too? Yeah. So you guys understand that a good pair of glasses or contacts are the ones that you forget are there immediately after you put them on, right? I mean, if you know they're there, it means there's something wrong. It means you got a headache. It means something's blurry, right? So worldview is a lot like a pair of glasses or a pair of contacts. You put them in, and by them, even unconsciously, you begin to interpret and see the world around you. That's what we mean by worldview. You don't notice them anymore. C.S. Lewis, I think he's got a quote there on your sidebar. I'm going to read it here. He's got a great quote about Christianity and worldview. He says, I believe in Christianity as I believe that the sun has risen, not only because I see it, that is the sun, but because by it I see everything else. Christianity is not simply a way to get us saved. It's a way that we now reinterpret the world. When you believe Jesus is God's Son and that he came into the world, that he revealed who God is, that he revealed true reality in his life, by that, we begin to see the world in a completely different way as Christians. It's like getting a new pair of glasses. So Razors 2, our hope, is sort of like a trip to the eye doctor, okay? We're trying to help all of us craft and mold this lens closer and closer to what Scripture teaches our lives are supposed to look like. So it's a lot like going to see the eye doctor. And Jesus was about this business, just so you know. There's this funny story in Mark chapter 8. We're starting a new series on Sunday. It's called Jolted. It's about 10 startling statements, or is it 8 startling statements? I can't remember. 10 startling statements of Jesus. And we're starting in a text in Mark chapter 8. But just before the text that we're talking about this morning, I was looking at it. There's this random story of Jesus healing a man born blind, but he has to touch him twice before he's actually healed. Do you guys remember that story? Have you read that story? So Jesus sees this man, he's blind, he touches him once, and he says, what do you see? And the guy says, he's never seen before. He says, I see men walking about like trees, basically. So he sees something, but it's very blurry. Jesus touches him again, and then he says, now I see clearly. That wouldn't stand out if it weren't for the fact that Jesus often, he either touched you once and you were totally healed, right? Or he didn't even have to be near you and it could happen far away. So why that story? Why does Jesus have to touch this person twice? And I was thinking about that. And then I read the next story is Peter and Jesus and the disciples are walking down the road and Jesus says, who do the people say that I am? And the disciples start saying things, and he says, okay, who do you think I am? And Peter says, and it's a famous passage in Mark, Peter says, you're the Christ. You're the Messiah. He gets it, right? It's the first time someone's called him that. One of the disciples have called him that in the book of Mark. So this is a watershed moment. Right after that, Jesus says, okay, you're right, Peter. I am the Messiah, and I'm going to die, and I'm going to suffer, I'm going to die, and then I'm going to be raised from the dead. He starts explaining what the Messiah has to do, right, to be Messiah. And what does Peter do? Peter rebukes Jesus. He says, no, don't talk like that. That's not what you're going to do. That's not what a Messiah is. That's not what you're going to do. And Jesus has to say, get behind me. You're not speaking the things of God. Peter is like the man touched once. That's why that story is there. He's like the man touched once. He sees Jesus as the Messiah, but not clearly. He needs a second touch, right? He needs his lens shaped even more. He knows who Jesus is, but he doesn't understand what Messiah is supposed to do. His lens is off. He needs a second miracle, right? He needs this miracle transformation, which will happen throughout the rest of Mark, right? Peter's going to learn that lesson, that this is, in fact, what a Messiah is supposed to do. He's supposed to die and suffer. So Jesus is about this business of lens crafting. Because the wrong lens, you guys, it has disastrous consequences for our lives. Seeing the world the wrong way has disastrous consequences. And we hope that Razors 2 is just a little bit of Jesus' spit in your eyes, I guess is what I'm saying. We hope this brings you a little bit closer to the way Jesus wants us to see the world. I want to illustrate a little bit more the importance of worldview, especially if you think of worldview as this lens or as a framework, right? It's a framework. It's a large framework by which we understand the details within it, right? That's what a framework is. So I want to illustrate that. Turn to page 7 in your notebooks. And then read just the first paragraph. I think it's italicized. Just the first paragraph. And then turn back to our notes. Don't read ahead. Just read that paragraph. And then turn back when you're done. Don't cheat. Did you guys cheat? If you cheat, you can't talk anymore. Just kidding. All right, those of you who are done reading, what is the story about? Theories. What did you just read? What's going on in that story? Who is this guy? He could be a murderer, right? Any other theories? A what? A coroner? Any other theories? Could be a surgeon, right? I mean, you read a story like that, and you're immediately struck by there are several interpretations that are possible here. The murderer one is probably the most striking. But you knew I was trying to trick you, so you had to think of something more clever than that. But you'll read on in Cole's article that this is a forensic scientist who's just being gross with his friend, talking about his job. But with that in mind, you need a frame of reference, right? You need a bigger story to help you understand the shorter one. Otherwise, you don't know. You can't fit the details into a bigger picture, right? You need a frame of reference, and that's a big word for that is called a meta-narrative. And I'm only putting that on your radar because it might show up in your reading later. Meta-narrative, which literally just means the story behind all stories. In Christianity, we believe we have a 4-chapter meta-narrative. It's the story that explains every other story. So God created, right? Humanity fell into sin. Jesus comes to redeem us, and he's going to come again and renew the world. That story, what I just said, is the framework by which we understand everything else as Christians. Right? Makes sense, right? It's a meta-narrative. It's a story that explains the other stories. So that's then we're calling that the four-chapter story. And really what we're going to do in Raisers 2 is apply that story to different aspects of our lives, our marriages, our workplace, things like that. So we're going to help understand it in light of that meta-narrative, that meta-story. So these are really what I'm trying to tell you. I'm telling you these things because they're just different ways of talking about what is a worldview. It's a frame of reference. It's a lens. It's a story behind all stories. When you understand worldview that way, you can see pretty quickly that everybody has a worldview, right? Everybody has a worldview. Whether they could articulate it to you or not, like the pair of glasses they can't see anymore, it's still there. Right? We all do, it's human nature to do that. And there are several key worldview questions that every worldview, no matter whether you're a Christian or not, has to answer. Now, these key worldview questions are questions like, who or what is God? Every worldview has to answer that question. Even if it's, you know, the atheist answer is there isn't a God. But they still have to answer that question. Who or what is God? Is God a person? Is he a force in the universe? What is he? Another question, and this is a really important question. Why is there something rather than nothing? They have to explain the reason behind existence. Why something and not nothing? Science, by the way, is very good at explaining how there is something rather than nothing, or is attempts answers at how there's something rather than nothing. It's very weak on why is there something rather than nothing. Actually, they would probably say it's not a scientific question. Another big question that has to be answered by every worldview, who am I? What does it mean to be a human being? Who am I? We have a whole lecture devoted to that. Who am I? Another one that comes right out of that, what's right and what's wrong with the world? What's right and what's wrong? Ethical questions, moral questions. What's true and what is false in light of your worldview? What is beautiful and what is ugly? Those are really all different versions of the same question, right? And then finally, just another example, what happens after death? What is death? Every worldview has to wrestle with that question, even if it's nothing happens after death. Now, with some of those questions in mind, I just want to put this on your radar, what's interesting. Every worldview has answers to those questions, but obviously some are better than others. And there are two tests, really, that I just want to put on your radar as you think about other worldviews and even the Christian worldview. A lot of people have worldview and they never ask this question, these questions. The first is my worldview coherent? Does it pass the coherence test? Is it internally consistent? Or does it contradict itself along the way? And probably every one of us sometimes live contradictory to our worldview. And that applies too. But is it intellectually coherent? Another question, and this is the more even more subtle one, but it is so important. Is it livable? Is it livable? Is your worldview livable? What I mean by that is I became a Christian at 18. And that is the question that God used to open my eyes to him, because I didn't believe in God. I had rejected religion. I didn't want anything to do with that stuff. But one day I woke up and I said, wait, if what I believe is true, if there's no God, then there's no meaning to life. My relationships, we're all going to die. Death is the only constant, right? The only thing I know is we're all going to die and we're not going to matter. And everyone I love and everything I care about will die, it will decay, it will fade away. Which means that there's no right and wrong. There's just the will to live, right? There's just the survival of the fittest. And as I pondered that, which was coherent with my worldview, but it was not livable for me. It went against every fiber of my being. I thought, that cannot be true, right? It's not livable. Which must have, in my mind, I thought, which must mean I was designed for something else. Something livable. because it didn't jive with me as a human being. It doesn't really jive with anyone. The people that worldview really jives with, we call sociopaths. Right? We put them in jail. Most atheists you meet, including if you'd met me, they still believe in right and wrong, even though it's not coherent with their worldview. Anyway, with those questions in mind, there are three basic worldviews that I just want to put on your radar. I think they're in your notebook. Could be wrong, though. The first is naturalism. The second is pantheism. Sorry, my handwriting's terrible. The third is theism. These are, I mean, basically any worldview you can break down into one of these three categories. So real briefly, naturalism is another word for materialism, which basically means there's no spiritual reality behind the observable world. There simply is the material world, and that's it. There's no God, there's no spiritual realm. You as a human being are simply the sum of a chemical process that is random and chaotic. That's what it means to be a human being. You survived, and someone in your bloodline gave you good genes, and that's it. That's naturalism. Okay, no spiritual realm, just a physical realm. The next big worldview, pantheism. It literally means all is God. Pan meaning all, in Greek. Theism related to theos, God in Greek. So all is God. These are worldviews that are animistic or magical. You know, there's a spirit behind everything. Everything is divine material, right? Everything has a soul. Worldviews like, so you think of things like Hinduism, New Paganism, those are examples. Everything is divine. Everything is spiritual. The material realm is actually kind of an illusion. And then there's theism. And the three major monotheistic religions are theistic. Islam, Judaism, Christianity. Are theistic. And this basically means there is a God, there is a spiritual realm, but he created the material realm, but he's separate from it. So it negates naturalism because there is a spiritual realm, and it negates pantheism because God is separate from his material realm. He created it, but he's not a part of it. It's not divine. So those are the three basic worldviews. And what makes Christianity, and we've talked about this before, among these, the three major monotheistic theistic religions. What makes it different is this four-chapter story. The other two religions don't have this. That God created the world, it was good. That humanity fell into sin. That Jesus came to redeem it by his death. It's chapter 3. And that he's going to come again and put it the way it ought to be again. Chapter 4. So that's creation. Here are the four chapters. Creation, fall, redemption, and new creation. And those are our next four lectures. We're going to spend a whole lecture on each one of those. And another word we've used for those is creation talks about the ought. This is the way it ought to have been. It's the way God originally designed life to be. It ought to have been this way. But through the fall, it is the way it is now. The way we experience life now is part of the fall, where it feels as if it seems like death and sin reign. But through Jesus, it can be different. So ought is can. It can be different. Jesus is in the process right now, in the middle of the fall, redeeming aspects of it. So the fall and redemption kind of run parallel tracks together. And then chapter 4, the way it will be, the new creation, the way it will be, where God returns his creation to the good that it was designed to be in the first place. So that's those, and like I said, we're going to spend a lot of time in those chapters. We're going to spend a lot of time hoping to shape these lenses of ours. There's an inherent danger, though, in what we're doing. There's an inherent danger in Christians getting smart. And it's that we can become arrogant. We can forget the reason why we do this, why we learn. After all, having right doctrine is not enough. There's a way to use that in the wrong way. You know, you think of Jesus. The theologically, the Pharisees were a lot more theologically correct and in line with Jesus than the sinners or the prostitutes or the tax collectors or the foreigners. the people that he spent most of his time with, right? The Pharisees had the right doctrine, but who was he always butting heads with? The Pharisees. Because they were using doctrine to beat people down. They didn't lift a finger to help them. It wasn't motivated, in other words, by love. Their learning, their doctrine, their knowledge of God, their lens was not used to love people. It was used to put them down and make them and build themselves up. So we don't want to do that in razors, obviously. So I want to turn quickly to 1 Timothy chapter 1. If you have a Bible, you can turn there now. 1 Timothy chapter 1. I want to remind us briefly why we're doing what we're doing. And in this passage, Paul's talking to Timothy, his protege, his apprentice, a fellow pastor. And he's reminding him in chapter 1, starting in verse 3. He says, "As I urged you when I was going to Macedonia, remain at Ephesus, so that you may charge certain persons not to teach any different doctrine, nor to devote themselves to myths and endless genealogies, which promote speculations, rather than the stewardship from God that is by faith." Stop there. So Paul's saying, yes, Timothy, doctrine is important. I left you in Ephesus to protect the gospel, to protect the teaching that I passed on to you. God, doctrine is important. Make sure to protect it. But then he says in verse 5, "The aim of our charge, the reason, Timothy, I'm telling you this, the reason you're a pastor is love that issues from a pure heart and a good conscience and a sincere faith." So it's not enough to just be right, Timothy, as Paul is saying. You have to love the people around you, especially those who disagree with you. Because this is the model Jesus left us when he confronted people. Jesus was never afraid to challenge people's worldview. Read the New Testament. He's constantly challenging people's worldview. But he wasn't so much arguing with people as he was presenting them with the opportunity to experience the true God in a transformative way. He wasn't arguing with them. He was inviting them into a relationship with the true God. And that had challenges that went along with it. I like to think of it in terms of he met these people in a burning building. And he wasn't so much arguing with them about whether the building was burning down or not. He was pointing to the exit sign, saying, "There it is. I'm the way. There it is." It issued from love for this person, not arrogance. We have to remember that as we begin in Razors. I want to conclude tonight with a quote from a guy named David Brooks. And David Brooks is a writer for the Wall Street Journal, or is it the New York Times? New York Times. Thanks, Dan. Kevin Harlan is obsessed with David Brooks. And so he makes all of us read these articles all the time. But this one was actually really good. actually, David Brooks is an incredibly thoughtful guy. I think he's Jewish background. I don't think he's a Christian. But very thoughtful. I think in some ways just speaks as a prophet in his venue, the New York Times. He has this to say about the stories we choose to define our lives. This is what he says. "We're all born late. We're born into history that is well underway, and we're born into cultures and nations and languages that we didn't choose. On top of that, we're born with certain brain chemicals and genetic predispositions that we can't control. We're thrust into social conditions that we detest. Often we react in ways we regret even while we're doing them. But unlike the other animals, people do have a drive to seek coherence and meaning. We have a need to tell ourselves stories that explain it all. We use these stories to supply the metaphysics, the meta-narratives, without which life seems pointless and empty. Among all these things we don't control, we do have some control over our stories. We do have a conscious say in selecting the narrative we will use to make sense of the world. Individual responsibility is contained in the act of selecting and constantly revising the master story we tell about ourselves. The stories we select help us, in turn, to interpret the world. They guide us to pay attention to certain things and ignore other things. They lead us to see certain things as sacred and other things as disgusting. They are the frameworks that shape our desires and our goals. So while the story selection may seem vague and intellectual, it is actually very, very powerful. The most important power we have is the power to select the lens through which we see reality. That's exactly what we're doing here. I hope you're excited. Have a great night. I'll see you here next week.